now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems, opening week of the Cardinals, things around the NFL, also from the Diamondbacks, and a disastrous weekend. Jody will be with us. And then we'll have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things around the college football scene. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. You should support them as well. Had a fine long weekend. Saw a lot of football. Thursday night, I was at Hamilton Centennial. Friday night, Sean Purdy, Brock's dad, Chubba's dad, and I went out, and we went to Perry. Saturday, was going to go Diamondbacks, got so caught up in college football, I just stayed in here and just did my thing. Sunday, USC, LSU. Monday, Florida State, just disaster. Disaster for Mike Norvell, I tell you. And so it was great. There's a lot of news. Like the Wilner segment today is going to go a while because there's just so much college stuff going on. But I'm going to start with the Diamondbacks because it's not looking good. Today I'm in this Diamondback mode of, man, they have these names in their starting rotation. And in August, it looked like, and I can make the case of, they're going to come together and they're going to really be hard to deal with. And their bullpen's going to be just fine. And then I'm looking at them, and it's putting up a lot of innings. Man, they're putting up a lot of innings. And the Dodgers come in here and just jack-stomped them. Just, man. And Ohtani goes crazy. And they get big crowds to watch base, which is great. It's great. But I'm sitting here today. They've got games with the Giants and then the Astros, who are just running away over the AL West. They still have seven with the Brewers, who are trying to fight their way through. They have the Padres to finish the season. And I'm just kind of like, man, this pitching is just not getting it done. Like, I didn't do the numbers yet. I'm going to work on it today on Three Dots. But just go look at their starting pitching and what happened over the last 4 days with the Dodgers here. And then go look at the bullpen and do those numbers. And is it overuse? Like Mantiply, I feel like every time I watch them play, Mantiply is out there. Every time. And yeah, they got him to get Ohtani out, which Friday, I think it's Friday night, he got Ohtani looking. But it's just not good. I don't know if you feel the same as I do, but today I'm not feeling as though they've got a 3-game lead over the Mets. It's not like I'm looking at the teams behind them and thinking, you know, the Braves, I feel like could overtake them. The Mets, I don't think they can overtake them, but you don't know. Mets aren't that good. But they came here last week and played pretty well. So, and the Dodgers, look, I figured the Dodgers would win the NL West. I didn't figure that the Diamondbacks would just get their doors blown off. Like right now, they've got to get to about, I'd say they've got to get to 92 wins with less than a month to go in the season. So it's like 15 games they've got to win. Get to about 92, I think you're in for sure into the postseason. It doesn't really matter about the whole wild card thing. That doesn't bother me. I'm at a point where I don't know. I got to be talked off the ledge today. I need some therapy on this, I think. It is opening week for the Cardinals. The Cardinals, in my opinion, are heading the right direction. Doesn't mean they're going to get there. In my opinion, they could be a playoff team this year. In my opinion, they are a squad that looks right around 500. They're going to have to outscore teams. I was in a fantasy draft last night. I hate it when people talk about their fantasy team and who they have. So I'm not going to go down that path too far. I'll just tell you, it's the same guy I've done fantasy football with for the last 35 years. And I kept telling him, take Cardinals because they're going to be in games 39-35. They are. I don't see this defense being able to stop anybody. And he didn't. I'm going to fire him. It's kind of funny, and this is just years and years, I think, of doing this. Today, there's, oh my gosh, the 49ers have got it all figured out. They got Ayuk signed, and big Trent Williams is coming in. They don't want to be in camp. How do you explain this? They hate August. So, of course they're there. It's just not that hard. But the Ricky Pearsall story, that is just awful. Stunning, shocking. Here's a kid from Corona del Sol that was under-recruited. When ASU signed, I was like, really? Ricky Pearsall? Wow, I thought NAU. And then he goes into the NFL draft as a first-round pick. Not that a first-round pick couldn't come out of NAU, but it doesn't happen very often. And that was one of those. I was talking yesterday with, I think it was Ralph Amston. Or maybe it was the day before. I forget. My days all run together. We were talking about wide receivers, greatest wide receivers that have come out of the state of Arizona. Oh, I know what it was. I'm watching Deuce Robinson on Sunday night. He's just such a beautiful athlete. Gosh almighty. The way he's just a gazelle with his size. I remember him in high school. He had 3 touchdowns in a state semifinal game. It's my son's final high school game. That's why I remember it. And just watching him go about his business. Then he was a National Football Foundation honoree. Got to talk to him a little bit there. Very much, yes, sir, no, sir. And so I put, Sunday night, I put Deuce Robinson on the Mount Rushmore of high school wide receivers. Well, of course, there's people that just have their different views of that, which is fine. I can go all the way back to Ron Jesse in Yuma. He was a Yuma criminal. Not to go too old school, but you know, Christian Kirk obviously up at Saguaro, Bobby Wade over Desert Vista. I thought the tandem of Kerry Taylor and Jarrell Robinson was as good a 1-2 punch. Devin Allen because of his speed over at Brophy. And I'm sure I'm leaving out some others, but yeah, it's fun. It's fun to do that. And we had some fun with that. Now, college football, let's just get right into this. Florida State stinks. When you go into the portal, and yet I think they're done. We're going to talk to Wilner about it. I think they're done. I just don't see any way, shape, or form unless they win their conference, win the conference championship, then they get into the CFP. The beauty of the college football playoff is on full display this weekend. Notre Dame has very few tough games left. I didn't think USC would be a tough game for them. For one game, USC looked dominant against LSU. USC has a new defensive coordinator, showed up. USC's defense has not been good for a long, long time. Michigan looked okay. It was the first game. They looked okay. Ohio State looked okay. Who else looked just Oregon? Oregon looked okay. Their offensive line did not look good. Dylan Gabriel, though, his stat line was crazy. So I took in a lot of college. UCLA did not look good. It's like, you just get on to basketball season. In terms of the two in-state schools, so yeah, U of A scuffled with New Mexico, and then they just decided, T-Mac just decided, you know what, I'm just going to do my thing. And he did, and they won with ease. But it was an awful lot of T-Mac. There's other players on that offense. If an injury happens, U of A is in big trouble, in my opinion, over there. But they took care of business. They have NAU this week. If we remember, a couple of years ago, the Lumberjacks came down off the mountain, went to Tucson, and won. That was as bad as a program was getting in Tucson. No offense, Jack fans. No offense. That was bad. ASU was, I would say, a pleasant surprise from this standpoint. When you watch a first game of the season, there's usually flags, a lot of flags. And there's usually turnovers, and there's usually dumb mistakes. And I'm watching the game, and I'm looking at it, and it was just, it's pretty clean football for a first game. Their defense is their calling card. Everybody gets excited about the offense, and I think there's some reason for that. And yeah, it's one game. It's one game. But if you think of it from this standpoint, and I'm going to talk to John Wilner about it at about 10:35. Jody Jackson's Gems is right around the corner with E.D. Marshall Jewelers. That is coming up here in a couple minutes. But if you look at just where we are today on this Tuesday, ASU has an SEC team here this Saturday. It doesn't matter if Mississippi State is not Georgia or Alabama. It doesn't matter. OK, Okay. It's an SEC school. Could be Vanderbilt. How about Vanderbilt winning? And Wilner put him in his top 25 of all things. It's an SEC school coming to Tempe. If you beat the SEC, which has not happened before, you're going to have people in this town because they just follow the W and the L. They don't care about the minutia of, well, it's not really a good SEC program. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Remember when Georgia came here and it was Matthew Stafford? And everybody's all excited about that. Remember that? I think A.J. Green was on that team. No Sean Marino. No Sean had to leap into the end zone with my oldest son. He had his camera. He's doing photography and he missed the photo entirely. Yeah, I remember a stand next to him. No Sean does the over. Those of you that know the game know what I'm talking about. And he takes a photo. He looks at it. He's just like, oh. I think he got like his cleats coming at him or something. Timing. But there was all this excitement around the program. Like, oh my gosh, we're going to beat Georgia. This is going to be it. This is where we're going to turn the corner. I'm not saying that's what it'll be like this Saturday, but if ASU is able to win this Saturday against an SEC opponent, and then they play next Thursday, they play two games in the next 10 days. Okay. They play at Texas State on Thursday, a week from this Thursday, on ESPN. You win at Texas State, and all of a sudden you're 3-0, and you're going to have people that will then sit up. In this market, you will have people that will sit up. Lose to the SEC team, beat Texas State, that's 2-1. Beat the SEC team, win on ESPN, 3-0. Really interesting time. Because I do think that all the garbage and nonsense that went on, all the people, all the stuff that went on, I have to tell you, I'm hearing nothing but positive things internally over at ASU. That has not been the case in a long time. That has not been the case in a long time. And it was usually people finding me saying, do you know how lousy it is over here? Or if I'd run into somebody, how are things going? You got a minute would turn into a half hour, and you're like, you got to be bleeping kidding me. That's what's going on here? I was interested to see the Oregon State, Washington State story. I watched their game on CW. CW did a nice job of producing them. So Oregon State, Washington State were trying to get their schedules done for next year, including the Mountain West teams once again. I believe the Pac-12 will come back in some way, shape, or form, whether it's next year or the year after. I do believe that. I believe it'll be a bunch of Mountain West schools. I don't know if it's going to be any of these schools that are currently that left and said, we didn't really get what we bargained for. How about that? Washington and Oregon, you couldn't see their games? If you're a Duck and Husky fan, you know what I'm talking about. How about that? Some dispute there. All right, Jody Jackson is next. Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. That is coming up on the Cardinals. We get ready for week one. And then John Wilner. I'm Brad Sussmat. Jody Jackson Gems. And when you see Jody, you're like, yeah, she's got gems from E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We appreciate their support. That is like, look at you. You are done. You are ready. You are rocking.
Like I say, you know, a sports broadcast always looks a little bit better with some bling.
It looks better, but, you know, the weekend around the Diamondbacks, we'll get over to the Cardinals in a minute. Let's just start and get the Diamondbacks out of the way. They're playing for the wild card now, right? I mean, we're willing to say that to one another here.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't look good. Obviously, they were already, they're going to have to sweep them in order to even, you know, to get to that point where the division was theirs. And I think that was a tall task. And then to lose 3 of 4, I saw some good things. I saw some bad things. The Dodgers are still really good. But yeah, the Diamondbacks, you know, I don't think that they were ever shying away from the fact that they would have to get in through the wild card. I don't think many people thought they would be contending for the division. I think they had a really good stretch there where people were thinking, is this an elite team in the league? And are they elite? Are they up there with the Dodgers, or are they just a really good team? I think they still have a great path to wherever they can possibly go. I also think, let's not underestimate how upset the Dodgers and the Brewers were last year, and the Phillies for that matter.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be easy. When you face these teams, they have that on their mind. The Brewers are going to have that on their mind in the next seven games that they face them to finish this season. There's seven against them. So, you know, teams are geared up for the Diamondbacks, and it's not going to be easy by any means. But yeah, the Dodgers showed just how difficult it is to get past them. And I would argue in a strange way, it was almost the thing that stood out to me was just their bullpen versus the D-backs bullpen, because that's kind of what the first two games came down to. And the Dodgers bullpen was just a bit better.
What do you, I saw you did the game on Roku, which means you're over on the Dodgers side. And I saw you interviewing Dave Roberts and all that.
Oh yeah. I got a lot of comments over there from our guys. Oh, you're back over here now. Okay.
That's funny. Do you find yourself, when there's a player like Ohtani doing what he's doing, you're so professional, but do you allow yourself to be a little bit of a fan when you're in that position? It's like, I'm watching just unbelievable play out of this dude.
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't been around him a lot because obviously he was with the Angels, you know, all of his career until this season. And then it's just amazing to me, just total fan take here, right? Like just taking myself out of this persona. And he is a ginormous human. He's a gigantic man, and yet he's so fast. You could see where the power comes from. But for all of me, I mean, you hear the stories about how much he sleeps, all the things that he does to get ready, which is really not that uncommon for some of the players that I've seen through the years, especially, you know, Japanese players, very regimented, very disciplined. And he's, for him to have it all working the way that it does, especially next year, you're going to see him pitching as well. It's not totally surprising, but just to see him, he's such a larger than life figure, literally. That, because he's kind of on the steps next to, I was kind of down next to the dugout. He gets up on the step and you're like, whoa, you know.
Is he bigger than me? Is he bigger? He's not 6'8". I'm 6'8". He looks like
he's not. He's just bigger, you know. I mean, Freddie Freeman's a big dude also. And Kevin Kiermaier's a big dude. You know, Mookie Betts is tiny. So, but you know, baseball players are, it's not about size really. But I think with him, what you see when you see a guy that's launching toward 50 homers, 50 stolen bases,
mm-hmm.
like you realize this is a very special human being.
What I was hoping Jody would say is he's not cut like you are, but you know, that's the way it goes. So
yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know, Brad.
Is there
anything athletic that you could do that would even be close?
I would tear a calf, a toe. Let's just not even. Jody Jackson with us for a couple of minutes. ED Marshall Jewelers. She is blinged out. We appreciate ED Marshall Jewelers and their support. Jody's gems every Monday. Cardinal season is here. I can make a case where I believe that they can make the postseason. I can make a case where they're one injury away, still a quarterback based on what I saw of the backups, that they're not going to come close to winning any games. I can make a case that they're going to have to win every game 42 to 39. What's your case about the Cardinals this year?
You know, all of those cases make sense, but it, you know, you got to take it week by week. I hate to be cliche, but when you look at like week one with the Buffalo Bills, it's a Buffalo Bills team that's also dealing with, you know, they're dealing with in some ways holes where the Bills are, you know, Bills are trying to plug holes. The Cardinals are building. The Cardinals have chosen pieces that they would like to have for their team, and where the Bills, you see a team that's building. So that's what they're going to come up against. There's going to be a shift in the landscape for a lot of teams in the NFL. And hopefully that shift for the Cardinals is moving ahead and moving forward. And I think you're right. The offense does lead the way. The headlines surround the offense. They were the fourth best rushing offense in the league last year. And I mean, yes, we saw a lot of it more toward the end of the year once Kyler came back, but it was fairly consistent. And I'm looking forward to that taking the next step. I'm still amazed that people hear James Conner and they don't really give him a lot of credit, which is wild to me. Okay. And then they've beefed up the line. They like the addition of Jonah Williams. They are moving Paris Johnson to a different spot. Evan Brown, you still got Will Hernandez. You've got Froholt, who has signed a deal now. They like what they have at center. I think the line is better. I think that Kyler Murray, with all of the weapons now, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to make a huge difference, but yet Michael Wilson is improved. Trey McBride is going to be another year better, and he was very, very good last year. Greg Dortch, I think he's, you know, he's a fan favorite for a lot of reasons, this underdog character who has performed really well, and I think he'll take a step forward. And then, you know, it just, there's a lot to like about the offense. And then defensively, there's a lot to prove.
Yeah, I'm just interested on this Sunday to see what this Kyler looks like. Because this Kyler is not one that was towards the end of last season. And we didn't see him, and he was hurt. And it was, so we really haven't seen what this Kyler Murray is all about. And this Kyler Murray's been given a Ferrari over a wide receiver that all the expectations are high up for, which he didn't have. This Kyler's been given an offensive line, which I think is actually a little bit better than what he's had the last few years. So, to me, Jody, this Sunday, the interest on the Cardinals side of the field is, yeah, can they stop Josh Allen? We'll get to that in a minute. But it's really about, okay, we finally get to see Kyler Murray for a season to start out with, and he's got a bunch of new parts, and let's see what he can do.
I think you're right. I mean, because as a quarterback, quarterbacks are all judged on their skills as they come up through high school, college, and into the NFL. The measurables, the speed, the arm strength, the accuracy. Kyler Murray has all of those things. It's how can he operate when things go awry? Well, when you add all these pieces, number one is hopefully things aren't going to go sideways very much. You know, you're not going to have mental errors. You're not going to have guys out of place. You're going to have wide receivers that can win one-on-one battles. So you've already put around him guys that have a better skill set, so that you can go according to plan, right? You can then, when things do get sideways, as they do, and you know that every play in the NFL, there's someone on the other side trying to wreck your plan. When that happens, is he capable of making better decisions? That's the biggest thing for me with Kyler. We know that sometimes when the play breaks down, he can run and he can make something out of it, and he can do something spectacular. We also have seen at times, you know, he can find a guy downfield still. I think that's a skill that he can improve on, you know, continuing to look for that target downfield. And then I think the biggest thing is going to be those moments and that decision-making in crunch time, and especially late in games. How much has Kyler improved there? That's going to tell us a lot about really the win-loss record, because that's where games are won and lost.
Well, and add to that, this is going to tell us about him in 2025. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and play capologist today, but look, we've given him a lot. If I'm the Cardinals management, give him a lot. You're back healthy. This kind of is a prove it year, in my opinion, for him, because the organization had bottomed out. Now the organization is coming back up. I think they're a fringe playoff team. I really do. It's one of those where they should be in most every game offensively. Defensively, let's get to Sunday, slowing down Josh Allen. Buffalo, there's a lot of angst about what's gone on with the Bills. It's not like this is the Bills of the last couple of years. So Josh Allen against Cardinal defense, what are you expecting Sunday?
Well, I mean, look, Josh Allen, we all know what he's capable of. Last year had 44 touchdowns, 29 passing, 15 rushing. He is, again, talking about a gigantic human. We were, you know, yeah. We talk about a big physical guy that can really do it all. Is he turnover prone at times? Possibly. So they're going to try to, you know, he's a guy that's been in the league long enough where, you know, but confusing a quarterback is always number one. And that's what Nick Rawls is going to try to do. Now, there's a lot of questions. No Stephon Diggs, no Gabe Davis. Now you've got, you know, Curtis Samuel is there. Keon Coleman's coming in as a second round pick. But the biggest weapon is, and dun, 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 we hear this a lot with the Cardinals, tight end.
Yep.
Dalton Kincaid, this guy is a major, major threat. How are they going to be able to shut that down? And then the running back, Cook, he's solid. You know, they liked what they saw from him. And as they transition from the Ken Dorsey over to the Joe Brady offense now, I think they do want to be more physical in the run game. And so just like Kyler Murray relying on the run game, they're going to try to help Josh Allen with that. But I think Kincaid is a huge target for Josh Allen. And I think that covering him is going to be another, you know, especially with you've got, unlike the Bills, who their safeties now have been, that totally looks different, right? They lost two guys that have been there forever in Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. The Cardinals have Budda Baker and Jalen Thompson there. And those two guys are the leaders back there around some new cornerbacks. And that's going to be the question for the Cardinals. But if the Cardinals can also get pressure up front, again, let's not forget Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones are a major part of what they were building in the offseason and trying to be better against the run, create, you know, some havoc there up front. That's going to be a big key to what happens on the back end.
That is Jody Jackson dropping knowledge. Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by ED Marshall Jewelers. I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. What we're going to do here with John Wilner is go 24 straight hours because we have so much to get to. I don't think that there's a chance we're going to get to everything today because John, I could go down all the games, but the business side, I mean, a fifth year of eligibility popped up last week. The CW popped up last week. The Pac-2 and the Mountain West couldn't agree on things in the last week. So since you and I have seen each other, the seismic shift of college football continues. So pick any topic off the board, John. It could be Florida State out of the playoff or maybe not out of the playoff. It could be Michigan looking pretty pedestrian against Fresno State. It could be Florida looking awful and get Jed Fish's bags packed out of Seattle to go down to Gainesville. I don't know, John. So take it away.
There were pop-ups. There was also blackouts, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget about Oregon and Washington fans not being able to see their teams play Saturday on their Comcast. I mean, yeah, a lot going on and off the field. This is college football, though.
Yeah,
we kind of forget how crazy things are. You know, you got 8 months of an off season and then it gets crazy. And this year, everything is exacerbated because of the 12-team playoff, because of realignment, because of so many changes at the NCAA level. The fifth year of eligibility situation, you know, just to clarify that football would not be affected. They would basically bring the other sports equal to football in terms of the eligibility clock. Because right now, kids can play in up to four games in a season. Like a freshman could play in up to four games in a season and then stop and retain all 4 years of eligibility. They're going to try to make the other sports equal to that. That's the real news on the eligibility front. But yeah, there was a ton going on.
Okay, so let me go back on that. That's a Mikey Keene deal. Mikey Keene was one, and I'm bringing this up because Mikey was a terrific quarterback here at Chandler High School, went to Central Florida, transfers to Fresno State, plays a few games and says, you know, I don't want to have that fourth game count against my year of eligibility, and I'm going to make more bank and more NIL, so I'm going to sit out the rest of the year. That was a loophole that got closed, from my understanding, right?
Yeah. Well, everybody can do it now, right? There've been a bunch of loopholes. Because also, don't forget the COVID season, right? Anybody who was eligible during the COVID season got a free year. I believe Keene was in college in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. So he also has a free year. So the COVID kids basically have six, you know, if they took full advantage of everything. So, yeah, there's been a lot of loopholes, and it's going to continue to change, as we've talked about. I think we could get to the point where there is no eligibility clock, where you could play for five or six or seven seasons, right? I mean, as soon as somebody challenges that in court, the NCAA will lose.
If you're a 35-year-old and you left college after your sophomore year for whatever happened in life, and you're like, you know what, I could go back to college, and I could make NIL, and I could kick. I could just go be a kicker. John, that's going to happen. We're going to have guys that should wave. You're going to have guys on their ARP card, right?
Yes.
Used to be BYU, you know, they'd need a razor deal when they'd play BYU.
Yep.
Because they were older, they went on their mission. That's going to be nothing compared to what I think this sport will look like. I don't think I'm not exaggerating either on that.
No, and what we're seeing with the court system is that the difference between what regular students are allowed to do and what college athletes are allowed to do has narrowed and is almost vanished, right? And that's the theory behind NIL, the theory behind the free transfers without having to sit out, the theory behind the extra eligibility. If it's available to a regular college student, it should be available to an athlete. And what you described is available, right? You can go back to school when you're 35.
Okay, let's quickly go through some of these things, but give it context, take some time. Pac-2 Mountain West, supposed to get a deal done, didn't get a deal done in terms of scheduling. Is this the death knell to the Pac-2? What do you think is going to happen?
No, well, the scheduling arrangement that they have for 2024 included the option to extend it for 2025. It gives Washington State and Oregon State six games against Mountain West teams, three home, three away. The deadline to extend it for 25 was Sunday, the 1st. They didn't extend it. What that means is that Washington State and Oregon State basically have to find six games each for their 2025 schedules. This doesn't have anything to do with the potential for there to be a merger or reverse merger starting in 26. It's not about a conference rebuild or the future of the Cougars and Beavers. It's specifically about the schedule, football schedules for 2025. So now what they've got to do is they've got to go out and find six games each, kind of piece together an independent schedule along the lines of what Notre Dame has. There's probably going to be a few games available with ACC schools, Stanford and Cal perhaps, but they've got a little bit of work to do to round out their schedules for next season.
Okay, so this doesn't have anything to do with animosity, because I've heard some of that from fans saying, well, does this mean the Mountain West doesn't want anything to do? Do you still believe, John, the Mountain West by 26 will merge with the Pac-2?
In some form, either some or all the Mountain West schools will join the Pac-12 banner, or the Washington State, Oregon State will go into the Mountain West as in a traditional kind of expansion move. One of those two things is likely to happen in 26. The animosity, and I'm not sure I'd even call it quite that, frustration on both sides, was the specifics of this scheduling deal, the cost to the Pac-2, the competitive value that it brought to the Mountain West. Those were the areas where they disagreed. It really doesn't preclude a merger or reverse merger in 2026.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline. You can check out his content on the site at sports360az.com. It's great to have John every week dropping knowledge. Okay, let's just get right through this. In or out, Florida State in the college football playoff?
I mean, technically, they still have a chance, because if they win the rest of their ACC games, they'd finish 6-2. Potentially, they get into the conference championship at 6-2. They win the conference championship, and they're in the playoff. It's an automatic bid. Their at-large path is completely blocked. They got no chance. And I would guess that one more ACC loss, and they probably are not going to get in the conference championship game. But that's the deal with the new playoff. If you win your conference championship, whatever your record is, whatever your losses are, you win your conference championship, you are in. If you're in the ACC, the Big 12, Big 10, SEC. So they still have a path. It's very narrow, but they've got a path, as bad as they have looked, as awful as they have looked.
I think Notre Dame's already in. I think Notre Dame's in, John. I mean, Notre Dame, just the brand name alone, if I were to believe behind the scenes, whether I like Notre Dame or don't like Notre Dame, doesn't mean anything, that people in the network television era are saying, you know, Notre Dame home game over the holidays in the college football playoff equals signing bonus for me for 50 years to come, because there'll be so much money sitting there. There's that. There's winning on the road at Texas A&M. Their schedule, I don't see where there's a couple of losses. Yeah, USC looked better. I'm looking forward to that game now. But I don't see where maybe Louisville, who beat them last year with Tyler Shuck, maybe. But is Notre Dame already in, John, in your opinion?
Well, they took a huge step with that win at Texas A&M because of what you mentioned. Their schedule, you know, there are some years where Notre Dame's schedule is ridiculous, yeah, because the schools that they have, you know, gone under contract with years earlier are really good. But this is a year where their schedule is really soft, and it's gotten a lot softer with Florida State, right? Florida State visits South Bend in early November. That game looked like, you know, very challenging for Notre Dame, but now it does not look challenging at all, given the way Florida State's playing. So they could easily be 11-0 going into the finale at USC, given who they're playing: Purdue, Louisville, Stanford, Navy, Boston College, right? I mean, decent schools, but Notre Dame's good. They got a very good offensive line, and their secondary is really good. Veteran quarterback. I think they are, you know, they are as close to a lock for an at-large bid as anybody could be, given their schedule. And like you said, the brand power of Notre Dame, if they're 10-2, they're probably getting in as an at-large. If they're an 11-1, they are a guaranteed bid for the at-large pool.
I think USC's defense was a story to me over the weekend. New coordinator came across town from UCLA to USC. Yeah. That was one. I think new coordinator on offense at Penn State came in, threw the ball over the place. They didn't even really recognize Penn State. They've been boring and asleep, but their offense was wide open. Couple takeaways there, USC, Penn State in the playoff.
Both look good. Penn State, that's a great road win at Morgantown. West Virginia was ecstatic about that game, right? They had Pat McAfee, like they closed the streets and huge deal. And Penn State goes in and kind of lays the hammer on them. Very good win for Penn State. And they, no school would have benefited more by playoff expansion years ago than Penn State, because every year Penn State, right, they're like 10-2. They lose to Ohio State, they lose to Michigan, and they finish 9th or 10th in the rankings. Well, now they'll get in the playoff at 9th or 10th. USC looked great on defense. I agree. They, in the ultimate Big Brother act, right? They just say to Danton Lynn, at the UCLA defensive coordinator, you know, move 5 miles across town. We'll pay you 50% more, whatever it was, 33% more. And they just come and take UCLA's defensive coordinator. Big impact. They look much better on defense than any Lincoln Riley team has looked in years. Now, we'll see how the Trojans perform on offense, though. Right? I'm not convinced LSU is the obstacle that we think of with LSU. Brian Kelly cannot win his season openers. Their defense wasn't very good last year. They got a new quarterback. I think LSU is more of a mid-level SEC team, and if that proves to be the case, then a little bit of the weight that you'd give to USC's victory, you kind of have to – it diminishes a little bit. So we'll see. But they certainly look much better on defense.
Clemson losing or Florida losing? Bigger concern to you?
Well, two different kind of backdrops to that. One, with Florida, the loss really puts the spotlight on – Billy Napier's job status. It's his third year.
John, he better be renting. There's no way.
Well, yes. And his schedule, in the last month of the season is ridiculous. He's got Texas. He's got Georgia, Mississippi. I think Alabama's in there, in Tennessee. I mean, he's as close to being done as you could be after one game, given their schedule. And that's an interesting opening if Florida does open, right? You'd think Jed Fish, who's a Florida alum, might have some interest. You'd think Lane Kiffin might have some interest, right? Because Florida's a better job than Ole Miss. The situation at Clemson's different, right? Dabo's not getting fired, but it speaks to his philosophy of not taking transfers, right? He is old school, and there's a commendable piece to what he's doing, but it's not realistic in today's day and age with the transfers. If you lose a kid, you got to go find somebody to replace him. And Dabo doesn't do that with the portal. So they are not competing, right? They have lost a lot. 4 or 5 years ago, they were competing for national titles. Now they are a second tier team. They're falling quickly. We'll see. The ACC is a mess. Florida State and Clemson both have looked awful in the first couple weeks. So you wonder, is it Miami's to win?
Well, it's Georgia, too, that take apart Clemson, just so we're clear on this.
True, but they lost a bunch of ACC games last year. They have not been the same program, and you can trace the decline partly to the transfer portal. It's not all about the transfer portal. Their quarterbacks have not worked out, right? They keep recruiting these five-star quarterbacks, and they're not panning out. And when they were winning, they had Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. So part of it is the offense and the lack of development of the quarterbacks. Part of it is the transfers. Part of it is just it's hard to win at the level they were winning for more than 6-8 years. Nick Saban was the exception.
Okay. This weekend of games, the Texas-Michigan game's a monster. There's some other games that are interesting, but I think Texas-Michigan is really the one. And we'll get to the in-state schools in a minute. But Texas-Michigan, what do you see there? I was not impressed with the Wolverines for the first three quarters against Fresno.
Yep.
Texas just took Colorado State and Jack stopped them, gave them a big check and said, thank you very much. have a nice day. What do you make out of it?
Well, certainly there's a good point of comparison there. A lot of times, you know, you have one team playing an FCS school, another plays a good FBS school, and you know, the comparison is apples and oranges. But Texas and Michigan have an apples to apples comparison because Fresno and Colorado State are roughly the same. Mm-hmm. And you've got Texas just blitzkrieging Colorado State, right? And then you got Michigan struggling with 16, was it 16-7, 16-10, something like that, early second half. Sean Moore era, rocky start. They got a new quarterback. They lost, 13 NFL draft picks. I think Michigan's good, really good on defense, but I don't know about their offense. I think Texas is going to go in there and beat them. The interesting piece is that game has a ton of hype, right?
Yep.
The new playoff means the loser of that game is not out of it by any stretch.
Oh.
They could still get an at-large bid. They could still get a guaranteed bid by winning their conference. So the move to 12 is not diminishing a game like Texas and Michigan the way some people feared. It's still got all the hype we could have asked for. This is exactly what you want to see. And it's also a reason why the selection committee is really going to be in the spotlight for how they value strength of schedule when they pick the at-large teams. If they place a value on strength of schedule, we will see more Michigan versus Texas in September. If they don't place a much value on strength of schedule and it's all about wins and losses, teams like Texas and Michigan aren't going to want to schedule each other, and that will hurt the sport.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Will margin of victory matter at all? I saw Ole Miss put up 70. And, you know, is the committee going to look at the margin of victory and say, aha, we have to include that? So if Michigan does win by a hefty margin over Texas as well, they should be seated higher. Is that part of it, in your opinion?
Well, the margin of victory has a factor in the analytics that they use and that they lean on. But margin of victory, I think, is only really relevant if you're looking at, you know, the same opponent or a cluster of opponents, right? If Texas struggles against a bunch of SEC teams, but Georgia, you know, wipes the field with those same teams, right? That's where you use it. But it is factored into a lot of the computer stuff that they view. They're not going to cite margin of victory, I don't think, very often, if ever. But it certainly will play a secondary role, I think, in certain decisions that could come up in a, you know, Team A versus Team B versus Team C situation.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes as we look towards Arizona State against Mississippi State and Arizona against NAU. I want to start with the Wildcats. T-Mac goes out, goes crazy. John, a wide receiver winning the Heisman Trophy is not something that happens very often. I think there's been just two in the last couple, about the last 20 years, if you think back on it. And T-Mac has games coming up against Kansas State that will be nationally televised, Utah, which may be nationally televised. Tough putt for him. Does he have any shot at all, or is this Christian McCaffrey at Stanford all again, where it's West Coast, not going to happen, nobody cares?
I think he has a very slim chance. I mean, could he get to New York, right? There's also the question of, is he good enough to get to New York for the ceremony? And then it's, can he win it? Can he win it? I think there's very little chance that he could win it. Could he get to New York? Perhaps. It's hard for receivers. It's hard for receivers from West Coast schools. It is hard for anybody from a West Coast school who doesn't play for USC to win the Heisman. It's, you know, Marcus Mariota was the exception. He was a Heisman front runner when the season began. T-Mac is kind of dark horse. And he's so reliant. Receivers are so reliant on other things, the quarterback, the offensive line.
Sure.
You know, the bar, statistical bar is so high. And he's also got competition from a receiver slash cornerback at Colorado, right? I mean, Travis Hunter, if he has a good season, he is going to take votes away from McMillan. That's something to consider. But certainly T-Mac is arguably the best pure receiver in the country. Luther Burden at Missouri is really good. There's some other guys very good. Hunter is a unique case because he plays both ways. I don't think he can keep it up. I think it's too physically demanding for him to get through 12 games playing both ways without an injury. And he got hurt last year. But it's going to be really interesting to watch both of them and also kind of the interplay between the two of them as it relates to voters nationwide.
Arizona State, what'd you make out of their opener against Wyoming?
Well, I've got a second row seat on the bandwagon. How about you, Brad?
Look at this. Oh, no, no. I am driving.
Oh.
I'm not driving.
I bet there's a fair amount. There's going to be a fair amount of ASU fans on that bandwagon, and they haven't been anywhere near the station in like 5 years.
They were disguised still as empty seats.
Yeah.
In fairness, but it's going to take time here. Now, I asked Kenny Dillingham on Monday of this week about the comparison of SEC with him being at Auburn back then to what he sees here at Arizona State. And he didn't blink twice. He said, this could be the same. Yes, we have the pro sports. Down there, what matters is it's the only game in town. But if we win here, and he's right on this, in my opinion, if you win in Tempe, it is a bandwagon front-running town. That's what it is here. Not going to apologize for it. The Diamondbacks drew $50,000 over the weekend for a game against the Dodgers, got jack stomped. So, you know, it can happen. They've not beaten an SEC team out here in the history of ASU. So here you have Mississippi State rolling into town. Very much looking forward to Saturday night to see what it's all about.
And they're fortunate because they get the SEC brand, but it's not an elite SEC team, right? I mean, Mississippi State, very beatable, you know, for ASU. I was impressed with the Sun Devils. To me, they looked like they had already played three or four games. They had the energy, the execution, whatever Dillingham did off season and in August, he had his guys ready to go. You're looking all over the place and you're seeing teams that are struggling on offense for at least a half, struggling on defense. Arizona's defense didn't look very good, right? ASU was terrific on both sides of the ball against a Mountain West team. We'll have to see if Wyoming is a top-level Mountain West team or a bottom feeder. They have a new coach, right? Craig Bull was a terrific coach. The guy they have now, Jay Sawell, first year, I suspect Wyoming is not going to be nearly as good as they were last year when they won 9 games. So that will diminish ASU's victory a teeny bit. But clearly they're better. And they're going to probably be competitive most weeks in the Big 12. That constitutes a big step up for Dillingham, gives him some momentum, gives him something he can sell to the fans, sell to recruits, energize the fan base to help with NIL money, which helps with recruiting, right? It's a cycle. And the winning, the NIL money, and the recruiting, they all work hand in hand. He needed something like that to kind of jumpstart things.
Okay, so I will drive the bus here on this one. In the next 10 days, if Kenny Dillingham leads ASU to a win over Mississippi State, the average fan out here will just say it's an SEC school. We're 2-0. We don't care about anything else. We're all in. The following Thursday, they play at Texas State. Texas State, I think it's a third-year program, John. I could be wrong on that. I know it's fairly new. Very winnable game. It's going to be on ESPN. ESPN is going to hype up Kenny at 2-0, the energy, the enthusiasm, all that stuff, all the play that ESPN gives them. If they're sitting here 3-0 based on where they were, yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's what we do. But 10 days from now, we could have a completely different conversation about where ASU is heading. They could also stub their toe and be 1-2, and then we're like, okay, when's basketball season start? So,
right.
No.
Well, and that Texas State game, if they beat Mississippi State, all of a sudden that Texas State game becomes a big-time trap, right? They're going on the road on a short week. They're reading the headlines. They're getting all these pats on the backs all across campus, right? That's a classic trap situation. I don't know that Texas State's got the teeth to make it happen, but it's something to watch for. If they do come out 3-0 from non-conference, yeah, there's reason to be excited. The Big 12 is, they drew a very difficult schedule in the Big 12 because of who they're playing and the teams that they're missing. They're missing the bad teams. They're getting all the good teams. That'll make it difficult. But look, to just be competitive, to just get to 4-5 wins even for Dillingham this year would be a huge improvement compared to what expectations were. If they get bowl eligible, you know, he's up for a conference coach of the year discussion. But certainly they are close to giving people a reason to believe. And so, as you said, a lot of fans around Phoenix are eager for that kind of thing to happen.
What John did not mention is in his AP vote this week, he had Vanderbilt in his top 25. John had Vandy. So if ASU is 3-0, I would think, Mr. Wilner, you would find a way to say, you know, Kenny Dillingham has a top 25 program. I could be wrong, but you voted for Vanderbilt.
I did because I think Virginia Tech, to me, Virginia Tech's pretty good. They were one of the teams that were considered
they're
an ACC favorite.
They lost to Vandy. They're not good, John.
They lost to Vandy. Pretty good. Maybe Vandy's pretty good. Here's what I'll say about ASU and Vandy. If Virginia Tech turns out in the next week or two to stink, I'll move Vandy off my ballot. If Wyoming stinks and Mississippi State stinks, I'm going to take that into account whether I vote for ASU or not. If those teams prove they're pretty good, then I'll vote for them. The ballots early in the season there's a lot of movement because you don't know who's good and who's bad, right? So we'll see. I could end up voting for ASU in a couple weeks. No doubt. I could be voting for Colorado next week if they go to Lincoln and beat Nebraska.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that. All right. We've had enough fun for today. I said 24 hours. I meant 24 minutes. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Brad.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, and we're back with more after this timeout.